Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Expert Guide to Fertility, Boost Your Chances for Pregnancy, by Joseph S. Sanfilippo, M.D., M.B.A., and Ardi Kumar, M.D., narrated by Susie Alphens. Disclaimer: the information provided is designed to assist in infertility evaluation and treatment. It is not to be taken as the way to evaluate the specific health problem you have. It is not designed to be a specific patient treatment plan. Your healthcare professional is the best person to provide you with evaluation and treatment for your specific problem. The stories are representative of actual patients, with names and details altered to protect their privacy. Preface. A Broadway musical, The King and I, has a song with the lyrics, "If you become a teacher, by your students you'll be taught." Let's modify that to, "When you become a doctor, by your patients you'll be taught." We're here for you. I'm frustrated. Why me? Many, many times, we have heard this from patients. You are not alone on this daunting journey, which is often filled with detours. 15% of couples have a problem with infertility, which means 180 million people worldwide have fertility issues. But let's focus on you. We mean that sincerely. As teachers in medicine, we educate others to be there for their patients. And both of us have tried to be there for every one of our patients. This approach is the primary focus of this book, being there for you. What we have learned as healthcare professionals is to be there, in good times and in bad. This book has been written to stand by your side on your journey toward fertility. The good news is that much progress has been made in assisting people who have difficulties getting pregnant. Years ago, we had only pills and injections to help women to ovulate. Now, we can offer in vitro fertilization, IVF, and a couple with a decreased egg count, low sperm count, or maybe even no sperm in their ejaculate, can achieve a pregnancy. The surgical aspects have come a long way, too. We offer several procedures, including robotics, to put fallopian tubes back together following a tubal ligation, and it may be possible to surgically remove a fibroid or an overgrowth of endometrial tissue, endometriosis, conditions that may interfere with a woman's ability to become pregnant. If cancer has been diagnosed, we can freeze eggs, sperm, or ovarian or testicular tissue to allow a couple to have their own genetic child following cancer treatment. Transgender patients can cryopreserve sperm or eggs for future fertility, thus allowing them to have their own genetic child. We can also freeze eggs for women who are not planning a pregnancy in the immediate future but want to retain that option, even to become pregnant at an age when their fertility might be reduced markedly. One goal of this book is to equip you with a detailed understanding of your specific medical situation, what tests may be needed, and the treatment options and resources available. The book is also meant to improve communication between you and your healthcare provider. We provide you with resources that you can check out to learn more about infertility. We address areas such as how to prepare for conception, emphasizing lifestyle, healthy living, and ideal BMI, body mass index, as well as practices to avoid, such as smoking, vaping, and using marijuana. We provide hope for men, including the option to seek expertise from a trained expert in male infertility and urology. We provide details related to female infertility, such as what tests and treatment options are available. Having uterine fibroids may prevent a woman from becoming pregnant or complicate a pregnancy, and we explain the treatment options. For pelvic pain and endometriosis, we explore when surgery is needed and what medical treatment options exist. Polycystic ovary syndrome, PCOS, affects 10% of women, making it the most common endocrine problem in females. We provide an understanding of the problem and the treatment options. Overall, The book is designed to provide you with a better understanding of what it might take to become pregnant. We arm you with the information you need to be more involved in your care and the decision-making process. We encourage you to see the light at the end of the tunnel. Best wishes to you for every success. Chapter 1. Christie's Story, A Personal Infertility Experience. It only takes once, said my mama, when preparing me for what could happen with premarital intercourse. A pregnancy, in her mind, required only one chance encounter before a positive test. Fast forward 20 years. I am no longer 16 years old, and no longer believe it only takes once. I know much better now. At 36, I know that it takes 11 rounds of intrauterine insemination, IUI, 5 rounds of in vitro fertilization, IVF, 91 retrieved follicles, precursors to developing eggs, 4 failed transfers, 4 different fertility clinics in 4 different states, more than $250,000, a husband who loves me unconditionally, and me. Someone who isn't giving up on the dream of becoming a mother, however that happens. Preventing pregnancy was always a part of my plan until I was married. I started my serious dating career after college. The effect of birth control pills on my hormones made me so crazy that I was only on them for a total of 5 months my entire adult life. I didn't like introducing chemicals into my body. Being extremely in tune with my body made natural family planning, or basically just knowing by my cervical fluids when I should be extra careful, an easy way to avoid pregnancy. When I met my husband, I always thought a honeymoon baby would be fun, and, if I'm being honest, I thought it would be impressive. I was so certain that my lack of birth control, my on-time period each month, and my attention to my body should result in getting pregnant easily. The first month that it didn't work, I wasn't worried, as we were still within the honeymoon phase. The second month, I started to do handstands after intercourse, and then lie still for at least 20 minutes with my hips on a pillow. The third month, I let my husband know we had entered the trying phase. The fourth month is when I began experiencing feelings of confusion, disappointment, self-questioning, and eagerness for results. As a woman, wasn't this something that was supposed to be easy? Wasn't this the one thing I could do that my husband couldn't? I went to my OB, obstetrician gynecologist, and lied. I told her we had been trying for 7+ months, so she would direct me to the next steps. I didn't have the time, or rather, like most type A women, I didn't want to use my time waiting for some textbook standard of trying for 12 months before clinical assistance. I was a unique case that needed a faster timeline. It never dawned on me the actual amount of time I would end up waiting. My original OBGYN spent only a few minutes chatting with me about my body and my plan. Have you tried Clomid? Have you gone to a fertility clinic? They are factories. You're young. I was 31 at the time. You'll be pregnant in no time. So many things were wrong about this. One, I didn't like the quick turn to drugs. Remember that part about not being on birth control pills? Two, she didn't ask about my history. Had I ever been pregnant? How were my periods? When were we having intercourse? Was I ovulating? 3. There was no suggestion of testing to learn more. At this early stage, I was still thinking that a quick fix was obtainable. I didn't have fertility problems. My husband's swimmers just hadn't met my lady eggs at the right time yet. I knew this wasn't going to take long. I was so healthy and young. Trying to get pregnant at 31 is not an outlandish idea. I started calculating my due dates each month. The recommended clinic was worse than the OBGYN had been. There was no real investigation of my past. I found myself waiting for someone to hear me explain how painful my periods had been since my first cycle, and immediately understand why it wasn't working. They didn't. My husband and I took days off work, boarded our dogs, spent the night in hotels, and naively walked into the clinic for 4 IUI cycles, each time with the same hope. With no positive results, they said the next steps were an invasive laparoscopy, a surgical procedure where a camera was inserted into my belly. I put my foot down. I'm not your run-of-the-mill patient, and I am certainly not a one-size-fits-all type of gal. If you can't ask me about my period, I can't be your patient. We walked out the door and found another clinic, locally this time. Whew. This new local clinic came through a reference from a friend who knew the doctor, who was a real gem. During our initial consultation, scheduled for 45 minutes, she didn't look at her watch once during the hour and 15 minutes that we peppered her with questions. We asked lots of questions. Why is this not working? How can you tell what we should do? What options do we have? How much does it cost? How long will this take? Probably 5 to 7 IUIs. You really do start to lose count. And one laparoscopy later, with our new doctor, it was time for IVF. After 2 rounds of IVF, 27 retrieved follicles, 2 named embryos, don't name your embryos, 3 cleared genetic screenings, 3 failed transfers, and being 2 years older, we moved on to another clinic. This time, we packed our suitcases, boarded a plane a few times, and headed to the team of doctors in another state, who were supposed to be pretty smart. By now, we were starting to understand the business of IVF. Costs were higher, but so was the quality of care. I had my own finance liaison. You need that when you're paying that much. My own nurse and my own doctor, who had limited patience. I received daily calls with lab updates, appointments ran on time, and the retrievals were like clockwork. We lived in a hotel for 8 days each time. During our first retrieval, they retrieved 12 eggs. At this point, I didn't know how many were mature and how many were pre- or post-mature. All I know is that only 1 follicle fertilized, which meant we only had 1 shot of this egg going through the genetic, chromosomal screening that we had planned. If there was ever a time to believe my mama about something only taking once, this was it. That mighty little follicle turned into a blast, an embryo, and made it through the testing. We had one. We only needed one. This was it. Until it wasn't. Even though we were distraught and exhausted, we didn't realize then what true exhaustion was. We were impressed enough by the clinic that we were willing to try again. This time, they said their entire team of 50-plus doctors were going to review my case at their weekly meeting and decide on the next best plan for me, one that we were hoping would be the sure bet. We did the bag packing, plane boarding, and hotel living thing again. This time, the retrieval produced 8 eggs. Not enough for a football team, but I could put 5 on a basketball court. When they went to inseminate this group, 0 were mature. Not one of the embryos were mature enough, in spite of them measuring 20 millimeters, to inseminate. All of that effort, time, money, and 50 doctors deciding on a plan, and that's the card we were dealt. The hardest part of that was calling my parents. If you haven't realized, parents get pretty involved in your hopes, too. What on earth had happened? The flood of whys took over. We were told that the fastest and most economical way to become parents was to find an egg donor. Let me pause here and pay tribute to all the people like me, who never in their wildest dreams imagined being in this situation. No one ever thinks they will be told that donor eggs are the only answer. No one thinks that they will find themselves in the IVF waiting room. No one thinks that they will need professional help doing what humans have done for years, successfully procreating without having to split the atom, or rather, the egg. Time for a real timeout. We were shocked. We took our Marriott points and went home, dumbfounded, speechless, lost, with no idea how to find our way out of this ring of purgatory. So we took a few months off from trying to get pregnant with no outside medical help. There have been few times during our marriage that we have made love without me thinking about if this time was going to result in a baby. We went the holistic approach. Acupuncture 2 to 4 times per month. Fertility massages. Yes, those are a thing. Vitamins, diet changes, meditation, and more. The vitamin and diet changes were minimal, as I have been on and off of dairy, gluten, sugar, and caffeine for most of my life. Vitamins have been a staple for me since I was a kid. This wasn't new. I just wasn't sure what to do other than get my body in tip-top shape. After a while, I realized it likely wasn't only my body that needed attention. My mind could use a restart, too. I started doing morning meditations. I wasn't leading retreats, but 10 minutes at the start of the day was enough to get my mind right. I increased my communication with the universe and with the little babies out there, one of which would become mine. I assured them how much we already loved them, that Mama and Daddy were not perfect, but we were going to love and care for them the best we know how. With my body becoming a temple, my mind staying focused and positive, I finally followed the advice of 2 friends and my previous fertility doctor and headed west to a renowned clinic with impressive stats and a no-nonsense approach. We went for a full-day workup where every fertility test in the book was performed. At the end of the probing day, for both me and my husband, we met the doctor to review the results. Everything looked great. I rolled my eyes, because honestly, everything had always looked great. My fallopian tubes were open. My egg reserve was good for my age. My uterine lining looked great. What did cause them to pause, though, was the number of follicles they saw on initial testing. They saw about 6, give or take. One side had 4, the other had around 2 or so. We were back to it only taking only 1 to fulfill our dream. In that meeting, the doctor ran through the numbers and statistics. Finally, a fertility language my husband could understand. When the numbers were run, the statistics calculated, our chances of getting 1 healthy, chromosomally normal embryo were small, so small that we walked out the front door and both agreed that we would likely not be back to this place. What they also told us in that meeting was that we had the option to do 2 to 3 retrievals in a row, get some good blasts, day 5 embryos, which consist of 100 to 200 cells, the first time, maybe 1 or 2, do the retrieval protocol again, get another 1 to 2 blasts, do it again, and try to get a total of 4 to 6 embryos to test genetically. While this approach seemed logical, it also seemed like it would take forever and be expensive. It felt like these people were throwing months around like I was in my 20s and dollars around like our funds were unlimited. As if on cue, we got home and regrouped. What did I feel in my gut? What was I willing to subject myself to? What were our options? This decision took months. Again. Fast forward. We did more research, and I found a minimal stimulation approach I wanted to try. Less drugs, less toxins in my body as we tried to grow my eggs. When I called around to a few clinics, I wasn't getting a good feeling. So I called out west again and asked if they offered this protocol. They said this is what the doctor had mentioned months ago. Sometimes you don't hear what is happening around you when you are in your dark place from receiving bad news. We were ready. I felt in my heart of hearts that I was a healthy woman capable of creating and carrying a child. Before we entertained any more ideas about adoption, egg donors, surrogates, or being the fun aunt and uncle with two incomes and no kids, we decided to give it one last shot. This was it. This was for all the marbles. This was the last hurrah, the final approach. This clinic, finally, put an emphasis on pre-procedure vitamins for both me and my husband. Nothing was going to be quick about this process, but I was grateful that they wanted my body and my cells to be in prime condition before giving them our last IVF allotted dollars. At last, it was time to start the priming for the retrieval. Belly injections, little blue tabs of estradiol, lab work, and baseline ultrasounds. We were back in the game. The stakes were high, but we were practically pros at retrievals at this point. My ultrasounds were showing good numbers, promising follicles, and good sizes. But let's take the word promising out. I don't think they ever used it. If they would have, it probably would have sent me through the roof because that's one of those words that gives unfounded hope. And while we need hope in this process, we don't need false hope. There are no promises in this line of experiences. Follicles aren't promising until you deliver. Because there were good-looking follicles on both sides, more than what they anticipated, we took the trigger shot. It is a weird process because for the next 24 to 36 hours, you just sit and wait and pretend to be normal while you are waiting to see if your luck is about to change for the better. Retrieval morning came, and they got every single one of the 26 follicles out. Groggy but happy in the recovery room, I started to think we had a chance. Status call after status call, the odds were in our favor. Four of the follicles had taken to the insemination. An update a week later, three of them had made it to day six. Yes, people outside of the IVF world probably think that going from 26 to 3 isn't really a good thing. But all of us in the club know that those are numbers to happily take any day. Next up was genetic testing. Somehow, they made it. All three tested chromosomally normal. We had three viable embryos. This was good. Very good. Round two came. At this point, while I was thrilled with our previous results, I was less than thrilled to be going through this again. Did I really need to be starting the retrieval process for a sixth time? Weren't three embryos enough? Couldn't we have more kids than we had beds available with what we have from round one? They said that, on average, you need two healthy embryos for every one healthy pregnancy. If we wanted two children, we needed at least one more. At this point, what was another 2 months? What was another couple of thousands of dollars? I thought it was a lot to ask, actually. I was tired of spending money on medications, and I was tired of my life revolving around injection schedules and apologizing for being erratic because of the hormones. But it was the youngest I was ever going to be. Our logic was this. If we transferred one embryo now and it didn't take, we would need to use another one. If the second one took, I would be pregnant and deliver. And then if we wanted another baby after that, we would have only one embryo left. So, I would be 2 years older and possibly needing to start from scratch again. Being a professional IVF-er is not part of my career plan. We decided to do round two in quick succession. The second retrieval showed good quality and quantity. Not as many as the first time, but I was checking out mentally and not very engaged in this one, so I wasn't too concerned. I ended up triggering early. It looked like the follicles were being overachievers, even when mommy felt like skipping school. The retrieval resulted in 14 retrieved follicles. Already our numbers were down. This was precisely our pattern over the past 6 years. High retrieval number, few quality eggs. We knew these numbers weren't great for us. We felt a little deflated, but honestly, I was just ready to stop living in a hotel room and for my pants to fit again. We called home and gave the report that this trip wasn't as successful as the previous one, but either way, we gave it our best. The lab called us and said that 7 follicles were inseminated. They were going to let them grow, and they would call us back in a week. A week later, we got the miraculous news that 4 had made it. And 2 weeks later, those 4 had also been deemed as chromosomally normal. What? How? We officially had 7 healthy and normal embryos waiting to become babies. I cried and cried and cried. I felt confident that I was finally going to be a mama someday. Everything in my world turned on its head, this time for the better. My outlook on life changed. People could tell me they were pregnant, and I could be around babies and people who wouldn't stop talking about their kids. Please nudge me hard if this is ever me. I wasn't pregnant yet, but I sure did feel like I would be one day soon. 7? Lucky number 7? Sure, whatever. It would have been lucky 4 if we had only 4. The Kentucky Derby was running a few weeks before our transfer. My husband, the numbers and statistics guy, loves to bet the ponies. I prefer to dress up, people watch, and keep my money in my purse, or pay for IVF. This particular derby, I was charged with making the group bet. The bet was $80 on one horse, more than I had ever put on one horse in my life. To my surprise, the horse won. The group made me place the bet on the next race, too, and that horse also won. I knew that day that our double-income, child-free, and 2 fur-baby family was about to change. Luck was with us. Science seemed to be with us. The universe was with us. Evidently, it was time. With my transfer priming protocol complete, it was time to choose our embryo. Loving them all equally, already sounding like a parent, we made our choice, crossed our fingers, and watched the little guy, the size of a period on a page, maybe smaller, appear on the big screen. There he was. Could this be it? Cautiously optimistic, we waited and waited. Hell hath no fury like an IVF woman waiting for results. We were on edge, giddy, nervous, and realizing nothing else mattered other than what the lab sent in the results. I used a new lab for my HCG, human chorionic gonadotropin test, a lab that emails you the results the same time they send the physician results. I saw the email. I called my husband off the golf course and asked if he wanted me to open the results and read them for us or wait until the doctor called. Not an ice cube's chance in hell were we waiting one more minute. I looked. He looked. The ranges looked good. To be pregnant, they want you to have an HCG level of 50 or above. Mine was 295. For the first time in my life, I was pregnant. As of today, I am 10 weeks and 6 days pregnant. I say my prayers every morning, thanking the universe that the babe is still with us and asking if he can stay. It's still, as you realize, out of my hands. It almost annoys me to end on this note with you. When asked why I never joined support groups of other women going through IVF during the past 6 years, my response was always honest. It would be too hard and frustrating when one of them would get pregnant. I always found more comfort with people in the trenches with me, not when someone crawled out and left me behind. So, I won't end here to tell you that all stories, even those that cost too much money and take too long, have a happy ending. Yours may or may not.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?